And let's see, we have, oh, there's Ann, okay. And Al will not join us for the first couple of minutes. He's gonna step out of the executive session, and then he's gonna join us in about 15 minutes or so. So I think you have all your board members, Jeff, and I think we are ready to go into executive session. Oh, are we waiting on Clive?
I was just gonna text him, but I think he's gonna join. Oh, I see him on now.
Oh, perfect.
All right.
Now we're good.
Then, that being the case, I would like to call this a special board meeting number 2-22 to order. It's originating at the Idaho Water Center and online via Zoom. The first item on the agenda is roll call. We've got roll call, please.
Mr. Barker? Mr. Chase?
Yeah.
Ms. Cohansen?
Here.
Mr. Olmstead?
Here.
Mr. Stevenson?
Here.
Mr. Vandermeulen?
Here.
Mr. Van Stone?
Here.
And Chairman Rabel?
Here. Okay, all right. The next item on the agenda is the executive session. I had that responsibility been delegated one time, but I suppose Ms. Cohansen.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
Joanne asked if I would mind doing that motion for her today.
Yeah, I
so,
see. Okay, all right.
Pursuant to Idaho Code number 74-206, Section 1, Subsection F, I request that the board resolve into executive session to communicate with legal counsel regarding legal ramifications of and legal options for pending litigation or controversies not yet being litigated but imminently likely to be litigated. I request that a roll call vote be taken and that the secretary record the vote in the minutes of the meeting.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's moved and seconded. Can we have a roll call, please, on the motion?
Mr. Barker? Mr. Chase?
Yes.
Ms. Cohansen?
That was a yes, I believe.
Okay.
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Olmstead?
Aye.
Mr. Stevenson?
Aye.
Mr. Vandermeulen?
Aye.
Mr. Van Stone?
Aye.
And Chairman Rabel?
Aye. Okay, the motion passes. We are now in executive session. Do we have...
Recording stopped.
Do we have the group that we want in the executive session if we cleared the room?
Give us just about 30 seconds, Mr. Chairman, to make
sure. Out of executive session.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the board resolve out of executive session and that the official minutes of the meeting reflect that no action was taken during the executive session. Sorry, I didn't have my mic on. Did you hear that okay?
I did. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second, Pete.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. We're now out of executive session. What do we need? A couple of minutes to let people into the Zoom meeting and
I think just a minute, Mr. Chairman. Let us open the doors here and let people back into the Zoom meeting, and then we can move on with the open session.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think we are all good to go, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. We're out of executive session.
Recording in progress.
We'll move on to the next agenda item number 3, which is the Lehigh Basin Settlement. Brian, how are we handling that?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to turn this over to Clive or Ann, I believe, and they will talk about the Lehigh Basin settlement that you will be asked to take some action on here in a few minutes.
Okay. All right. Clive?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to be brief this morning.
We gave you a full briefing on the agreement at your January 21st meeting and reported that we had reached a comprehensive settlement, which was a culmination of about 2 years of negotiations. Just to summarize the key points, the agreement is a voluntary agreement. Water users can decide whether to participate or not. The agreement will provide a pathway for resolving the pending applications that are in the Mill Creek, Big 8 Mile, Big Timber, and 18 Mile areas. It will also provide a pathway for water users to perfect a protectable water right in high flow water in the Lemhi Basin, subject to certain terms and conditions, and it addresses fish habitat needs and provides a program for addressing the water supply issues in the Lemhi Basin. When Norm and I finished our report at the last meeting, we reported that we were getting signatures from the parties and the agencies. I'm pleased to report that the members of the working group that have decided that they would like to participate have signed their signature pages, and the number of them are online today. In addition, the state agencies have also signed the agreement as well, and so it's now to the board for your consideration as an approval. I think it's important to expect that we will have to do some implementation work on this. Since the last meeting, we have had an opportunity to work with the Department of Water Resources, which, although not a party, certainly has a significant stake in this matter, as significant in the sense that they will have to implement the agency staff will have to implement the agreement. They have shared with me and Norm a couple of edits that they would like to make to the Attachment B legislation. Those edits are not ones that are substantive, but rather seek to incorporate three specific provisions of the agreement into the legislation. The first provision would be adding the Section 1 into the legislation that would recount that this agreement is not precedent for any other agreement based on the unique circumstances within the Lemhi Basin. That's important from the department's perspective so that other people in the state will be cognizant that this is not a model for other solutions to other problems in other basins. In Section 2.5, they would like to have incorporated the two conditions, the one condition being that the stream flow maintenance water rights only would be subject to a voluntary curtailment during the period of time in which the McFarland campground minimum stream flow would be exercised, which is that 3-day period twice in 5 years. So that condition would be added into the legislation, as well as the provisions that deal with proportionate sharing of water on the common sources within the basin. The reasons that the department has requested those changes is that it's much simpler from an administrative standpoint to have those provisions reflected in the legislation, so it's not necessary to resort to the legislation for purposes of administration. As is often the case with these types of agreements, oftentimes the new personnel come into the agencies aren't familiar with the provisions of the agreement, and so the department would like to have these kind of key provisions that will govern administration of the water rights that are being developed through this agreement can be determined just on the face of the statute itself. We haven't had a chance to share those changes with the other parties to the agreement yet, but both if the board approves the agreement going forward, both Norm and I would be in a position to take those edits to the parties and get their concurrence. I don't see this as a substantive change. I see it simply as what commonly happens with legislation is conforming it to reflect the needed information for administration of rights. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I have no further comments. I would turn it over to Norm to add any additional comments he would like to make.
Do we know if Norm's on? I didn't see him on the participant list.
Okay.
I think he had another function.
All right. Then with that, Mr. Chairman, unless you have questions for me, that would be my report to you. And we, both Norm and I, are pleased to have been able to assist the board in this effort, and we look forward to your action on the agreement.
Okay. All right. Board members, are there any questions for Clyde? Okay, I don't think I see any. I know that some of those who are signatories to the agreement and others who have been participating in this process may want to provide us with some input before we look at this resolution. Do we have I'm just kind of looking. I think Mr. Whitaker may be in the conference room, and then I see two or three other people on Zoom, as well as Fish and Game, that may want to have a comment too. Let's try and limit this.
James?
Yeah.
Yeah, right there. Okay, we're putting Mr. Whitaker in front of a microphone, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Good morning, board, and thanks, Chairman Raybould, for allowing me to address the board this morning. And I've got some issues that I'd like to bring to the format here. We've had a lot of discussion about this willing seller, willing buyer issue, and you know, that sounds really good up front. But when
Mr.
you,
Mr. Whitaker, I'm going to ask you to hold your comments to the agenda item we have in front of us, and that's the settlement agreement, and so the terms within the settlement agreement.
Okay, you know, part of the problem is that, and this might be enlarging it a little bit, but is that there really wasn't any problem between us and the Lemhi Irrigation District until the department got involved, and it seems like they have or legislators and things as a general have a way of looking at problems that aren't problems and then not addressing problems that are problems. And the main problem we have in Lemhi is we don't have finished water, and just like all the rest of the West, why we're subject to these high flow, quick runoffs, and then we're out of water early in the season. And I don't know, I've been to the Idaho Water Users Association, and I've been to the Farm Bureau, and I see an enormous amount of money available that could be used to benefit the community. And 421761 indicates that the Water Resource Board is supposed to allocate water to the best and beneficial use for as they see it. And I don't know, it's kind of hard to think that this water, when it's merchandised to the Bonneville Power Administration, take 2 CFS for 60 days would bring in $10,800. And that money ran through a pivot would bring in $200 a ton on hay and 2.5 ton in the Lemhi, which is common. would bring in $65,000 to circulate through our community and buy groceries and equipment and vet supplies and fertilizer and all that to support our community, while these waters that are taken out of state essentially contribute nothing. And I figured up the minimum stream flow that on the Salmon River, and with what the state's committed there, why, there's basically $87 million minimum, and I know it's way above that on most years that it's flowing out of state. And when we're up there trying to, in essence, take these high flow waters from the ones that are able to put it to beneficial use. And according to Colorado law, if you take water for a public use, why, it should be compensated for it. And
how do these comments tie in with the terms in the settlement agreement and the provisions that are provided to the water users in the Lehigh Basin under the settlement agreement? I think what you're describing is the Water Transactions Program of the Idaho Water Resource Board, and that's separate and apart from what we're trying to accomplish with this settlement agreement.
Well, it's making a call on those high flows that historically we've been able to divert. And the settlement agreement, in essence, puts McFarland Campground ahead of any of those historic high flows that we've generally all used. And now, why, just on Big Timber Creek, for instance, why, with the bird application, why, it added a ran that up to 18 CFS from the 13 CFS that was placed on my right in 2003. And with that, why, there's 11 CFS that's just not diverted to either bird or myself, that is a bypass flow. And an average season of 21 days, that takes $20,800 out of our community, and that is just gone. We need to think about this, what we're doing to the local community. And of those, why, there's 342 water rights above McFarland Campground that are affected by these high flow water rights. And in essence, why, we've already saw what that's done by Alan Purcell, is it's taken the early flow, the late flows, and the high water flows with these water transactions, and essentially broke him. He's got a basically a place that's burned up and has been burned up now for 2 or 3 years ever since the water transactions program went into place. But this stuff's all interrelated, both the high flows, the minimum stream flows, and the water transactions. It appears from our perspective that it's an opportunity to take 100% of the water out of our valley and leave us all high and dry. And this really hasn't been any local input other than half a dozen of us that saw what's coming down the pike, or those that have been coerced into given an adversary opportunity to show injury other than the department. But so anyway, these not only the high flows, but the minimum gives an opportunity to, and with the water transactions, basically an opportunity to take all water out of the upper Lehigh Basin. And I guess back to the 342 water rights, and most of them were attached. I think I sent a public statement around everybody that had 26 of them that listed them that was in opposition to abrogating or changing this separate streams from anything to what it was, or those and myself are the ones that hold those water rights, and we're deeply concerned that, especially with this dry year facing us, and we've had this aggressive campaign coming right up the limelight of putting in pivots and not doing any recharge to our bottom, and we all know how valuable that storage water is, whether it's in an aquifer or in a reservoir, to the continuity of a community. So anyway, I guess with that, if there's any questions from any of the board members or anything, why, I'd be happy to respond to them, Mr. Chairman, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Whitaker. Board members, any questions for Mr. Whitaker? I don't see any. Are there others who have participated in the settlement negotiations that would like to comment at this time?
Mr. Chairman, this is Carl Ellsworth. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go right ahead, Carl.
Appreciate the opportunity. Just a few comments on about the comments that were brought up. Number one, water rental, I think you brought up. This agreement doesn't pertain to any of the past water rental agreements that we have and doesn't change them. Number two, concerned about taking all the water out of the Upper Valley. I think one of the most important things that this committee set up in the very front of this was that this agreement would not change any current water rights. And it does not change any current water rights that we have. And so I don't think that's a concern. The only change, bring up separate streams, and I'm a water user on several of those separate streams. In fact, most of my water comes out of those separate streams provision. And it's been a concern, but I think as we work through this agreement, we've addressed that separate streams concern by the way we have it written. The only water from that separate streams that's going to go down is if you file the stream flow maintenance water right, then you will have turned your water loose 3 days, 2 out of 5 years. And it's very clear that that's the only time that that will occur. That McFarland Campground water minimum stream flow is only for 3 days, 2 out of 5 years. The water users that I've talked with on these separate streams, and several of them have signed in already. Unfortunately, I might have to do that again because it's changed a little bit. But once they understand that the trade-off is turning that water loose for the 3 days, 2 out of 5 years, and our benefit is to get a regular water right for that high flow water instead of under the general provision, we feel that that is a very good trade-off. I think the other comment that was brought up was the minimum stream flows that this creates. Those minimum stream flows are junior to everything that we do. They're going to be junior to our current water rights. They're going to be junior to the new water rights that are going to be developed through this agreement. And they're junior to our stream flow maintenance water rights. So I think this agreement addresses all those questions. The bypass flow is one that this agreement doesn't have anything to do with. And historically, the problem, this agreement did not dry up Mr. Purcell. The new well rights that were filed and then created a bypass flow is what has taken water from us. At least once we get this agreement done, we will secure that high flow, and those bypass flows and new water rights to be junior to it. Unfortunately, this agreement wasn't in place to help Mr. Purcell. With that, I think that's my comments. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to address them. And thank you, Mr. Chairman and board members.
Thank you, Mr. Ellsworth. Members, any questions for Mr. Ellsworth? I don't see any. Anyone else? Lowell, or is there Carl? Yeah. Any?
Jeff, yeah. You tell me if it's an appropriate time to address Mr. Whitaker's comments on the water transactions program.
No, I don't want to handle that topic. I think you have some comments either in support or concerns about the settlement that the board is considering today approving.
Carl did a really good job.
Okay. Yep.
He All covered right. it.
Okay. Anybody else? Tom for Fish and Game, or who? Good to go.
Thank you, Chairman. Sorry, I had to unmute the computer, but no, I really have appreciated the last couple of years working with the water. I think the agreement that we've developed is going to be very good for the fisheries within the river, as well as a benefit to the water users, and hopefully it's a win-win for everybody. Okay, I think it's a good agreement. I think one that will have long lasting water rights, securing your high flows, and at the same time providing perpetual benefits for anadromous and resident fish in my watershed. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Corrett, board members? Okay, was there anyone else who wanted to make comments at this time?
Mr. Chairman, Matt Weaver, if I could, on behalf of the Department of Water Resources.
Yeah. Please do, Matt.
Just want to say I appreciate everyone that participated on this. We've gotten to a settlement that, you know, is a compromise for a lot of people, and that means everyone doesn't always get what they want. But it's a good end settlement that I hope will clear up a lot of litigation and a lot of administrative questions in the basin moving forward. I do think there's a little bit of work left to do on the legislation from the department's perspective, but as Clive said, we can work on that moving forward. The last comment that I would make is there is going to immediately, I think, start the implementation of phase of this, and Clive and Norm have done a great job to date, but I'm not sure their work is done, and I would hope that they could stay on with the board to help with some of that early implementation and at least review of some of the documents that are going to come after this stage. That's all I had, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Matt.
Mr. Chairman, this is Al Barker. I just want to make sure I get the gist of this agreement. It seems to me to be that we are replacing a high flow general provision, which is essentially not a water right, with a stream flow maintenance water right application at the option of the water right holder. Is that correct? Caught.
Sorry, I was on mute. Yes, that is correct, Mr. Barker.
And can you just tell me what the benefit of having a water right as opposed to a high flow condition would be to those people who choose to use it?
Mr. Barker, as it currently stands, a general provision gives a water user the opportunity to divert high flow, but that diversion is subject to all present and future uses. So as more water is developed, the high flow provision will become less valuable. By converting it to a protectable water right, those water right holders that convert will then have a protectable water right that is not subject to further diminishment.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, Brian, I think we're ready to look at the resolution. Is Cynthia going to cover that, or Ann, how are we going to do that?
Mr. Chairman, you have a resolution and that was sent out in your packet this morning. I think it's the first thing, actually, that is there when you open Jennifer's PDF packet that she sent out to you this morning by email. Basically, the gist of the resolution, excuse me, is that after a lot of whereases that recite the background leading up to the resolution and leading up to the settlement agreement, the resolution would, if the board passes the resolution, the board would approve the Lemhi Comprehensive Settlement Agreement and authorize its chairman to execute that agreement on behalf of the board. Then the board would provide the legislature with a copy of the settlement agreement and request enactment of the proposed agreement through the described legislation upon approval of all the parties, and I believe the board is the last party to approve. So that's what the resolution in front of you would do, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Board members, are there any questions about the resolution before us?
So, Mr. Chairman, this is our worker again. Do we need to, if the board were to approve this, would it be contingent upon final review and approval of the legislation, or how does that work, particularly the legislature decides to change the language of the legislation that's presented? Maybe that's a question for Mr. Strong.
Yeah, let's let Clive answer that.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Barker, what we will do is, with the edits that come in, we'll come back to each of the parties and get their concurrence. If we find any differences of opinion, then we'll have to come back and reconvene. But the idea would be to do the shuttle diplomacy we've done in the past, go to each of the parties and make sure they're compliant or in satisfaction of the settlement agreement. This is not uncommon. It's typically what happens with legislation. You have little tweaks as you're going forward, but as long as it remains substantively the same, which I think it is right now, I don't anticipate that we'll need to have further action. But if there is a substantive change, we'll certainly bring it back to the board and the parties.
Any other questions? And I believe we're going to approve this resolution thinking that these minor edits that have been suggested to the legislation will be included in our approval. And then if that changes from that, if other parties don't agree, then we'll have to come back and look at what the final legislation would be, Al.
Mr. Chairman, this is Brian Olmstead. Do you want me to read the resolution that we're to approve, or just move to approve it as printed?
I would entertain a motion to approve the resolution as printed and delivered to each of us.
Okay. Just one comment, real quick. I totally respect Mr. Whitaker's worries about private property rights. We all have gone through that in all the water basins. I think this agreement protects the water right better than not having the agreement, and certainly protects it a lot better from future lawsuits. So I will move that we approve this agreement as discussed, with the possible slight legislative changes.
This is Pete. I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion on the motion? There being none, let's proceed to vote. I think we want a roll call vote on this.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Barker?
Aye.
Mr. Chase?
Aye.
Ms. Cole Hansen?
Aye.
Mr. Olmstead?
Aye.
Mr. Stevenson?
Aye.
Mr. Vandermeulen? Mr. Vanstone?
Aye.
And Chairman Rabel.
Aye. Okay, thank you all who are participating on this agenda item and to the board. The next agenda item is the Big and Littlewood recharge applications. I think Ann Bondi may have an update for us on that.
Chairman, members of the board, we did discuss this matter in executive session. At this point, we are continuing negotiations. We feel good about the direction that those are going, and I'm feeling confident that we can get that resolved, hopefully in the next week or so. We need to come back to you once we have a completed package for you to approve or disapprove that agreement as well. So anticipate bringing that back to you very shortly.
Okay, all right, thank you. Any questions for Ann? If not, we'll move on. Administrative rules, and Brian, is Matt going to handle that?
Yes, he is, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I am here to give you another update on the status of our rulemaking across all of our efforts. And I'll note at the outset that I do have one rulemaking related resolution for your consideration today. We'll get to that about two-thirds of the way through my discussion. So let's go back and start, unless there's no questions, with the last presentation I gave you back in January. As you know, we have four rulemaking dockets before the legislature for review and approval. That's an omnibus non-fee rule docket. That's an omnibus fee rule docket. That's our rules of procedure and our stream channel alteration rules as we conducted those rulemakings under the ZBR initiative of the governor. In my last update, I reported we had presented to the House, but we hadn't yet presented to the Senate. We've since done that. We did have a little bit of discussion in the Senate Resource Committee, similar to the discussion in the House about some of the details of the dredge mining permitting process that was changed in the stream channel alteration rules. But ultimately, both the House Resource Committee and the Senate Resource Committee approved all of our rulemaking dockets without any change. The approval of our rules by the germane committees probably signals that no one's going to come after our rules, but that doesn't mean that they're final and effective. For our pending rules to become effective after June 30th of this year, the following legislative actions need to occur. The legislature needs to pass a concurrent resolution in the House and the Senate approving all of our fee rules. The legislature needs to pass a going home bill reauthorizing all of the agency's rules for another year, and the legislature needs to sine die. Although there was some hope earlier in the session that the legislature would functionally carry out all of these steps, it's becoming apparent now that they won't. And as a result of that, we're going to head down the path of another year of temporary rulemaking. And as a result of that, DFM sent us another guidance memo. It should be in your board materials. It's very similar to the guidance in the past year. To carry out DFM's direction, I've prepared a resolution for your consideration that would adopt and authorize the publication of your current pending fee rules before the legislature's temporary fee rules, thereby renewing them for another year in the event that the legislature doesn't get that job done. The temporary fee rules would conditionally become effective on or before July 1, 2022, should the legislature fail to concurrently approve them and finalize them, fail to pass a going home bill before sine die, or fail to sine die, as they did last year, which kind of, as you recall, put us into that scenario where we had to redo some of our rulemaking efforts because we hadn't anticipated that. Importantly, the current temporary rules that the board and the department are acting under represent all of our combined rules as they existed on January 1, 2021, before we started any ZBR rulemaking. The temporary rules that you will be authorizing with today's resolution represent all the combined rules as we modified them through the ZBR process. In other words, this temporary rule will effectuate changes to your rules contemplated through last year's ZBR rulemaking processes. And specifically, they will substantively and comprehensively change our rules of procedure, the comprehensive state water plan rules, and the stream channel alteration rules. Again, were the legislature to go forward and concurrently approve and finalize our rules, we wouldn't need to do this. We'd end up with the same rules at the end of the day. This is just putting in place those rules in the event that we don't get there with the legislature. And with that, Mr. Chairman and members of the board, I'd ask for your consideration of my resolution before I go on.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Board members, any questions for Mr. Weaver?
Mr. Chairman, Matt, what's the effective date of the temporary rules?
So they will, it's complicated if you read the now therefore, but in effect, should they not adopt and finalize our rules and sine die, they become effective on sine die. If for whatever reason we get to July 1 and they have not taken action, then our temporary rules become effective on July 1 because the current temporary rules will either expire on sine die or on June 30th. Garrick and I worked through a complicated flow chart to make sure that we had all of the boxes checked.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the adoption of the resolution discussed by Mr. Weaver.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second that.
This is Joanne, I second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Brian, you want a roll call on this, or do you want, is a vote adequate?
Mr. Chairman, a roll call is probably safest because these rules do include fee rule packages as well.
Okay, then let's have a roll call vote. If you could do that for us, Jennifer.
Mr. Barker?
Aye.
Mr. Chase?
Yes.
Ms. Cole-Hanson?
Aye.
Mr. Olmsted?
Aye.
Mr. Stevenson?
Aye.
Mr. Vandermeulen?
Aye.
Mr. Van Stone?
Aye.
And Chairman Rabel?
Aye. Okay, thank you. Board members, are there any other non-action items?
Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Well, you're not done yet.
Yeah, right.
I'm sorry.
I know we all wish I was.
I thought you got what you wanted. Apparently you want more. Okay.
I got what we needed. That's not always what we want. Just an update on our zero-based rulemaking for this year. Remember that we are following the ZBR rulemaking effort this year regarding our water supply bank rules, our drilling for geothermal resource rules, our well driller licensing rules, and then hopefully a combination of our mine tailings impoundment structure rules and our safety of dams rules. Regarding the water supply bank rules, we now have a docket for that. That's docket number 37-0203-2201. The rulemaking team, which consists of the program manager Mary Condon, Phil Hummer, and Remington Beyer, have completed the prospective analysis envisioned by the governor's direction to us, and they have prepared a rulemaking recommendation memo to the board, which should be in your board materials, and then we prepared a notice of negotiated rulemaking. The team is recommending that the board undertake negotiated rulemaking to repeal and then repromulgate a new water supply bank rule. As I said, you should have a copy of that. The notice of negotiated rulemaking will be published on March 2nd in the next version of the administrative bulletin. That public notice does envision two public meetings to be scheduled. It will schedule two public meetings, that's a more accurate way to say that. On March 22nd, 2022, the first meeting is scheduled for 8:30 a.m. and will focus on the water supply bank and Rule 30 of the water supply bank rules. The second meeting is scheduled for 12:30 that afternoon, and it will focus on Rule 40 and the appointment of local rental pool committees. All related rulemaking materials, including a straw man rule, will be published on IDWR's web page well in advance of those public meetings. I would just note that when you read that recommendation memo, there is some discussion of the fees in that rule chapter. To date, we have not modified any of our fees through rulemaking. So that might bring additional interest on this particular rulemaking. Regarding the drilling for geothermal resource rules, that too has a docket. That's now docket number 37-0304-2201. That rulemaking team consists of Eric Bowe, the groundwater protection section manager, Chad Hersley, hydrogeologist, and Tim Luke, the compliance bureau chief. They too have completed prospective analysis and a rulemaking recommendation memo. And a notice of negotiated rulemaking. Similar to the water supply bank rules, they're recommending that we enter into negotiated rulemaking to repeal and repromulgate those rules. They do identify some opportunity to clean those up and to modernize them a little bit. There probably will be some reduction in that rule, but unless we get a lot of interest from stakeholders, probably not a lot of substantive revisions to those rules. The notice of negotiated rulemaking will also be published on March 2nd in the next volume of the Administrative Bulletin. And that notice identifies one public meeting that is scheduled for Tuesday, April 5th at 2 p.m. We have not completed our analysis and recommendations for the other ZBR rulemaking this year. We hope to get those in front of the board for an update at a coming meeting and get those published in April or May. As I described at the last update, unless the board proposes otherwise, I won't ask the board to take formal action regarding any of this ZBR rulemaking until we're ready to adopt and publish a proposed rule, and that's probably in that July timeframe. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude the update.
Okay, thank you, Matt. I just hadn't scrolled down the page far enough. I apologize for cutting you off. Board members, do you have any questions for Matt about the subject matter he just covered?
Mr. Chairman, Matt, do you anticipate wanting, desiring, needing board participation at these public meetings like we've had in the past?
You know, really, that's a question now for the individual board members, I think, Mr. Chairman. We have had some participation when the board has shown up. We haven't had a lot of engagement from the public. Sometimes the board hasn't shown up and we've had a lot of engagement. Primarily, that was the stream channel rules, and those just, you know, give people discomfort when it comes to recreational dredge mining. Water supply bank rules, maybe there would be more interest with some of the board members, I think, than the geothermal drilling rules. I think those are pretty benign.
Okay, Matt, these two public meetings are going to be in Boise?
I think they're going to be hybrid, so you can participate in person in Boise or virtually.
Oh, okay. Okay, I would think if a board member resided, you know, within 50 mile radius of the meeting site. Well, we will work with Matt and try and make sure that either virtually or in person we have some board attendance at these public hearings so that if questions do arise, we can participate in resolving those. Anything else, Matt?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Now, number six, are there any non-action items for discussion from the board members? Anything you'd like to update us on, Mr. Patton?
Mr. Chairman, just your next regularly scheduled meeting is March 31st and April 1st here in Boise. Although, as you've heard today, you may need to, or we may need to schedule a special video conference meeting sometime between now and then to take up a few additional items. With that, Mr. Chairman, that's all I have.
Okay, one additional thing. I believe that JFACT is going to consider the department budget next Wednesday morning for those that want to zoom into that.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
All right, with that, I think we could look for that motion to adjourn.
Okay,
it's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. That will be it until the, I believe it's the Class C committee meeting is going to convene at 1:00.